This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Coming up, an encouraging jobs report bodes well for the economy.
If they actually show up and do an interview, there's actually a good chance of getting a job offer.
Sharp attacks on social media companies over online safety for kids.
You have blood on your hands.
In the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, a new push to speed up the return of Native and Indigenous American funeral objects and remains to tribes.
The unknowing of what's going to happen to those items because they're not in our care is very frightening.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. On Friday, a government report shows a big gain in hiring, roughly twice what economists had predicted, as well as a jump in wages. We asked CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger if it really is what pundits are calling a stunning burst of hiring.
It is. I mean, 353,000 jobs, two times what we were expecting. I think that I feel bad for economists, to be honest with you. They just can't seem to get these numbers right. And it does show that there's underlying strength in the economy. So the January result is good. The revisions to previous months was really good. If you look at all of 2023, there was an average of 255,000 jobs created over the year, where we thought there was going to be a recession. So I'm so happy about it because it really does make me feel like, at least as someone who covers this, that all of the negativity about the economy is a little bit overblown. I mean, I'm not saying that prices aren't higher, but boy, when you can get 350,000 people employed, that's a great month.
So the whole Chicken Little, the sky is falling, not happening.
Well, not this month. I'm not a person who likes to look for bad news. So I'll take the good when it comes, and the bad will also be there, you know? And I just want to make sure that, you know, people know that, of course, there will be a recession eventually. I just don't know when. And these numbers are really, I think, astounding and surprising. And it's good to have a happy surprise sometimes.
And wages are up, too. And what kind of jobs are we talking about? Is it across the board?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Wages were up by 4.5% from a year ago. It's average. I know there are a lot of people who are like, I didn't get a pay increase. I get it. But we're talking on average. Many people did better than 4.5% and many people did worse. So, you know, interestingly, in January, there were some sectors that stood out to me. Professional and business services. Now, this is an area that used to be a pretty consistent job creator. And last year, it only added 14,000 jobs a month. Now in January, 74,000. Healthcare, 70,000. Retail, 45,000. Government, state and federal, 36,000. Now maybe that'll go away, but you know, this is a very wide range of job types that is underneath all these different sectors. So I can't tell you specifically if you're looking for a job in media that life is good, because that's not a good industry and it's consolidating, but there are a lot of other places. Maybe there's a media services division in a healthcare company where you can get a job.
But there were a bunch of companies that made some pretty high profile layoff announcements, right? I mean, Google, Amazon, UPS. Does this offset any of the gains?
Well, you know, first of all, we don't know exactly when those announcements are taking place. So some of them, you know, yes, there are technology companies that staffed up like crazy during the pandemic. I mean, think about this. Amazon, at the end of 2019, I think the global workforce was 800,000. By the end of 2021, the workforce doubled from 800,000 to 1.6 million. Now they are laying people off. Maybe they went too crazy during that COVID era. But I think still the global workforce is 1.4, 1.5 million. So still much larger. Technology is a much larger sector than it was before the pandemic. And they are losing some jobs, but there are still job openings posted in other areas. So I think that that's something that's very specific to technology. There are other sectors, for example, when you think about media, where that is a consolidating industry. There will be fewer media jobs overall. And I don't think those jobs are coming back. So I think it's hard to compare those two. But yes, there are certainly announcements of layoffs. But what this report tells us is either those jobs are not reflected in the data, or maybe those industries aren't as big a mover to the overall economy at this point.
CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. A different report out this week has new thinking about how generative AI will affect tech and banking jobs versus those positions in warehouses that experts had been warning would be in big trouble. We asked Chief Economist Gad Levinon at the nonprofit Burning Glass Institute to explain how that changed.
Well, AI got better, and now they can replace the tasks and abilities of the white-collar people, even some relatively sophisticated tasks and abilities. So that is kind of impacting people higher up in the income distribution, you might say.
When you say AI got better, you mean it is better talking, it is better imitating what humans have been doing when they are writing things or doing legal cases or developing software?
Yeah, it's better at collecting information. It's much better in generating content out of the information. That's probably the main improvement. So a lot of things that are related to generating content out of language or out of images is what's the kind of the new big deal.
So how would AI, for example, do a better job with banking than actual human?
Well, a lot of the kind of the more routine jobs I wouldn't say they're done better than humans, but the thing is that they are done much cheaper. Therefore, a lot of jobs or a lot of tasks could be done at a lower cost, and you know, business want to maximize profits, so they will use technology if it's cheaper than humans.
So if they're using technology and it's costing businesses less, what does that mean for the actual jobs? Does this mean that people in banking and tech are going to go away because they're making way too much money than a computer that can, you know, write their software for them or handle putting together some sort of database for them?
Well, the short answer is yes. Many jobs will go away. You know, it has been happening already for many years. It's just kind of that the type of workers that will be impacted are kind of higher up in the wage distribution.
That's Gad Levinon at the Burning Glass Institute. One note, prolific actor Carl Weathers, who starred as Apollo Creed in the first four Rocky films, died Thursday, according to his manager. He was 76 years old. Coming up, social media CEOs on the hot seat. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keys. This week on Capitol Hill, furious parents and lawmakers confronted the CEOs of the nation's largest social media companies during a bipartisan grilling at a Senate hearing on protecting children online.
How are you keeping kids safe online? Why should parents trust Meta anymore?
Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, along with the heads of Snap, TikTok, X, and Discord on Capitol Hill for a grilling from lawmakers.
I know you don't mean it to be so, but you have blood on your hands.
The Senate Judiciary hearing room was packed with families, many of whom held photos of their children who have died by suicide due to online sexual exploitation. Senators focused much of their fire on Zuckerberg, who was forced to apologize directly to victims' families.
Would you like to apologize for what you've done to these good people?
He was testifying for the eighth time.
Instagram also displayed the following warning screen to individuals who were searching for child abuse material. And then you gave users two choices. Get resources or see results anyway. Mr. Zuckerberg, what the hell were you thinking?
Snap CEO Evan Spiegel also aggressively questioned.
Did you or everyone else at Snap really fail to see that the platform was the perfect tool for sexual predators?
Senator, that behavior is disgusting and reprehensible.
I'm very happy with the senator's questions. They were very pointed, but I was not happy with the responses.
For Tammy Rodriguez, whose 11-year-old daughter died by suicide after severe social media addiction, Zuckerberg's apology was not enough.
When he stood up to apologize, he looked right in my eyes, and there's no feeling or emotion.
Also in the room, Shauna Pouch. She's raising her 11-year-old granddaughter, who she says was sexually exploited on Snapchat.
I'm very frustrated with listening to these CEOs. How many more children do we need to lose in order for this to change?
The next step is entirely in lawmakers' hands. I pressed the chair, Dick Durbin, and ranking member Lindsey Graham about what they will do next. They say they want to reform the law to allow users to be able to sue tech companies, and they plan to bring that to the Senate floor as early as this fall. Jolene Kent, CBS News, Washington.
A California teen is being charged as an adult for a swatting incident at a Florida mosque. That's what police call false reports of active shooters and bomb threats.
Prosecutors believe they have their suspect. Alan Winston Fillion could be one of the most prolific and dangerous swatters they've ever encountered.
I'm going to commit a mass shooting in the name of Satan.
Investigators say the 17-year-old California resident has been calling in numerous disturbing and fake threats. Last May, he allegedly threatened a mosque in Seminole County, Florida, adding gunfire in the background.
Hello, what's up?
He's allegedly targeted Washington State, Texas, Florida, and Maryland at times, including hate messages denigrating race, religion, and sexual orientation aimed at mosques and historically black colleges and universities. Court documents even point to Fillion swatting FBI facilities and say he was likely to threaten senators and the Supreme Court. Tracking him down was not easy. On Telegram, he would disguise his identity with usernames like Nazgul and Payman Arman, a fictional language from the Lord of the Rings books and movies. As investigators closed in on him, they discovered that the suspect was also selling swatting services, $40 for a gas leak, $75 for a bomb threat or mass shooting. Fake threats that tax law enforcement resources and put real lives in danger.
The ammunition's real, the guns are real, and it just puts a lot of people in a dangerous situation that's uncalled for.
These swatting calls have real-life consequences. In an unrelated incident of 2017 in Wichita, Kansas, a man was shot and killed by police who showed up at the home because of one of those fake calls. If he's convicted, this suspect could face up to 65 years
behind bars. Jeff Begay, CBS News, Washington.
If you own a Tesla in the U.S., it's probably being recalled. Reporter Jeff Gilbert.
Tesla's recalling 2 million vehicles, nearly all of those it sold in the U.S., because the font size is too small on warning lights. That will be fixed with an over-the-air update. Meanwhile, the government has upgraded a separate investigation into complaints of power steering issues with more than 300,000 Teslas.
More bad Tesla news.
For years, Tesla has been improperly disposing of oils, batteries, paints, and other hazardous materials produced at its facilities across the state. And according to a lawsuit filed by 25 California counties, that toxic waste may have ended up in landfills. Tesla owner Scott Carrillo was disappointed in the company.
When people first purchase a Tesla, you're thinking you're doing the right thing by purchasing a green car, but it sounds like they're doing some things that are a little bit shady.
A judge has ordered Tesla to pay $1.5 million in fines and penalties. The company has not commented on the lawsuit. Matt Bigler for CBS News, Fremont, California.
On Friday, people were holding their breath to get the weather prediction on Groundhog Day. WTAJ-TV's Maria Kate in Pennsylvania.
Happy Groundhog Day!
Yay! Gobbler's Knob, filled to the brim.
I'm so excited. Groundhog Day is my favorite holiday of all the holidays.
People scurrying in from near.
From Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
And far.
From Houston, Texas.
To see the seer of seers, the prognosticator of all prognosticators.
We just love groundhogs, and it's just like such a Pennsylvania tradition.
I'm here to learn the language of the groundhogs, learn a new skill, and communicate with them.
Even Governor Josh Shapiro made it out to Gobbler's Knob.
Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania is the center of the universe.
Punxsy native Brandon Ishman wanted his friends from St. Francis University to experience all of the fun.
I don't think a lot of them realized how big of a deal this was. I had to get them up here at least one time while I was in college and make sure that they kind of saw the experience up here.
The age-old tale is, will Phil see his shadow or not? So, what did the groundhog goers think?
He doesn't see a shadow.
Shadow, but it doesn't matter because he's always right.
Early spring, hopefully.
I'm gonna go no shadow.
Early spring, but it's probably not gonna happen.
He's not gonna see a shadow because it's cloudy.
No shadow.
I'm hoping for early spring.
And the verdict for 2024.
But what this weather did not provide is a shadow or reason to hide.
Well, you heard it from Phil himself. Early spring, he did not see his shadow. So I think we're off to a pretty good start for the beginning of 2024.
But in the Florida Keys.
Waiting for the mollusk meteorologist.
People waited with bated breath for a queen conch, that's a shell, you know, to make its prediction at Aquarium Encounters in Marathon, Florida.
Yay!
But this conch did see its shadow, predicting 6 more weeks of winter. That's not so bad at a place where the average high temperature is 75 degrees. Coming up, a former hostage speaks out. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. Some Israelis in Tel Aviv are holding nightly protests against their government, demanding an agreement with Hamas to bring home more than 130 hostages still being held. CBS's Deborah Pata spoke with a woman who was kidnapped in the Hamas terror attack on October 7th with her 3 young children. She's been released, but she's speaking out for others.
It was a moment of pure joy. Ofri, Yuval, and Uriah Broditz reunited with their beloved family dog, Rodney. Together with their mother, Hagar, they'd been dreaming of this during 51 days in captivity.
Wow. It's a moment that I will never forget.
You both share it, really. You thought you'd lost everything.
And then I got them back. It's just, you know, I was living a miracle.
On October the 7th, as Hamas militants stormed their kibbutz, Hagar was hiding inside her home with her 3 children and their neighbor's 4-year-old daughter.
The fear that you feel when you hear the death is coming.
Her husband, Avichai, was wounded in the attack. He thought they were dead, but they'd been taken to Gaza, where they were held in a building above ground.
Did you hear the fighting?
Yeah.
The house, when we were staying, He was collapsed from the IDF bombing.
And what did you say to your children? How do you give them hope?
I just told them every day it's going to be okay.
But it was not okay. Not only were they smack in the middle of the war, Hamas had told her husband was dead.
So you spent all your time there grieving?
I didn't cry because I couldn't cry. I have to take care of my kids. I was sure that Israel would rescue me. But after you're staying there for such a long time with your kids, you lose your hope.
Avichai never lost hope, inspiring the campaign to bring them back now. But he's worried the Israeli government is not doing enough to bring the rest of the more than 130 hostages home.
And I think they're being paid to do something and they're not doing it.
They're not bringing people back.
They need to know that it's their only mission.
His family is slowly healing. They all sleep in the same bed at night. And their dog, Rodney, never lets them out of his sight.
He's like a pillow for their tears and for their hugs and for their bite.
Does Rodney sleep in the bed?
Yeah.
So actually, it's six.
He's the first one in the last town.
Deborah Patter, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
This is a new report details the mental toll on the children living through the brutal conditions in Gaza. Some have seen their parents killed in front of them and other terrible things, and some have been facing starvation and lack of clean water.
The UNICEF report found that even before the war between Israel and Hamas began almost 4 months ago, 500,000 children were already in need of mental health support. Now that number has doubled to 1 million, almost all of the children currently in Gaza. UNICEF spokesman James Elder says thousands of children have died in the war.
I feel like I'm almost failing in my ability to convey the endless killing of children here.
The report found that an estimated 17,000 children were either orphans or had been separated from their parents. Linda Gradstein for CBS News, Jerusalem.
CBS's Cammie McCormick with a report on a new poll finding half of U.S. adults think Israel has gone too far in its war with Hamas.
Support is also falling for the Biden administration's support of Israel. Just 31% of Americans approve of his handling of the conflict. This new poll from the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds more Republicans also believe Israel's response to the Hamas attacks has been too heavy-handed.
Now to Sudan, where the United Nations Food Program is urgently calling on warring parties there to allow the safe delivery of humanitarian food assistance. Some 8 million people have already been displaced from their homes. CBS's Pamela Falk.
10 months into what the UN calls a forgotten war in Sudan, the bloody conflict involving mass killings and rape between the military and paramilitary forces, the hunger and refugee crisis in Sudan has reached a breaking point, the latest violence in a 20-year war with over 20 million people dependent on aid, particularly in Darfur. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres places the blame squarely on the warring parties.
This is the fault of those that sacrifice the interests of their people for a pure struggle for power.
In Port Sudan this week, the UN's refugee chief traveled and spoke with people displaced by fighting and losing hope, where more than 13,000 people have been killed and some 25 million people, 14 million of them children, urgently need humanitarian assistance, including nearly 18 million people who face acute hunger. Pamela Falk, CBS News at the United Nations.
North Korea fires a new round of cruise missiles off its west coast. Reporter Alex Jensen from Seoul.
This fourth North Korean cruise missile test in 10 days appears to be part of efforts to develop a range of nuclear threats. That includes from the sea, as also, according to state media, leader Kim Jong-un just visited a dockyard that may be vital to his country's development of submarines that could potentially fire missiles and pose an even greater nuclear threat.
the power of collaboration on display in Minnesota, where state troopers and others joined forces to save a life. WCCO-TV reporter Uba Ali with details on a precious delivery.
When you hear sirens and see flashing lights like this, you might think you're about to get pulled over.
We were dispatched for a call for service to do a blood run.
But this wasn't traffic trouble. It was a mission to get life-saving blood, specifically platelets, from Red Cross in St. Paul to a patient at a hospital in Morris, quickly.
Oftentimes we can send it via cab or with our own Red Cross driver, but if it's an emergent situation, we need to utilize those state troopers.
State Trooper Deanna Wayne and six others jumped into action, forming a 170-mile relay from the metro to West Central Minnesota.
It is a well-oiled machine.
Matthew Fanning with Red Cross says this collaboration with Minnesota State Patrol is crucial, especially when smaller hospitals don't have platelets on hand in a dire situation.
It's not a product that has a long life on it, and we need to get it to the patients in a fast manner.
In Trooper Wayne's dash cam, you can see her take off and then hand off the life-saving supplies.
Thank you.
Between her and a half dozen other troopers, the trip took just 2 hours.
That relay system works for them and works for us, works for the patient.
Coming up in the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keys segment, returning indigenous tribal objects. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Welcome to the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keys segment, where every week we discuss issues including race. This time we're talking about new federal rules meant to speed up the process to return Native and Indigenous American funeral objects, remains, and other artifacts to tribes. Institutions such as the American Museum of Natural History in New York and Chicago's Field Museum are closing halls or covering display cases as the rules require them to obtain consent from tribes before displaying or doing research on the artifacts. We spoke with Myra Macio Zamora, an archaeologist and curator with the Pechanga Band of Indians in California, about what this means and the healing it brings to the tribes to see these items safely home.
The original law was passed in 99, but with our new, you know, refresh to the law, it has allowed museums and institutions to kind of relook and reevaluate how they're handling NAGPRA. I think with the new regulations, it's really been a change in timelines in reference to how museums and institutions are working with Indigenous communities better. But it also is, I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, there isn't the same amount of funding across institution and museum, you know, across the U.S. So the funding is really important, and the resources of how much funding you have, how many staff people you have at your institution really reflects how fast and how quickly you're able to do this type of work.
So let me back up and ask you, as a layperson, I mean, everybody's seen the movies where they're the artifacts from Egypt. And of course, I'm in D.C. with the Native American Museum. I've been to the Museum of Natural History in New York, and there are a lot of things. Some of it are from burial grounds. Some of it are for other things. So is it that the museums acquired these in unfortunate ways? I mean, from grave robbing and that kind of thing? Or did they come to the tribes in the first place and say, hey, can we have these items and display them?
No. So I think part of what needs to be highlighted is with a lot of those institutions that have been around, you know, 100 plus years, you know, the history of how the ancestors and all their belongings came to that institution. And if, you know, we're talking late 1800s, early 1900s, where there was no consultation with that indigenous descendant community when something came in. So the idea of control, and as an indigenous person, not having a voice, is really now part of the law, and also having a say of what is going to happen. So, you know, what's happening now is these institutions are dealing with the past that they've inherited, the past 100 years of, you know, collecting or donation or in grave robbing. And that's really rooted, you know, unfortunately, in a lot of the archaeological practices in the U.S. That now it's a lot to deal with now. You know, it's these large scale multi-year projects of returning loved ones home and all their belongings. So I think it's on the institution side, I also see how it can be very overwhelming. But then, you know, it's very important, and it's, you know, that type of work of bringing a loved one home is very emotional.
Has this changed the tenor of the conversations between your communities and the museums, who I know in some places, I mean, like the Egyptian Museum and the British Museum, have fought bitterly over exchanging things that they probably should not have had and collected in, you know, questionable ways. So is this helpful that you're finally going to be able to have items treated with respect and displayed or not displayed in a way that is okay with your culture?
You know, I think this, the resurgence and the refresh to the law on NAGPRA is very helpful. It puts a whole new light on how consultation, and by consultation, I mean actual meetings with museum staff and, you know, Indigenous people, and how those need to be conducted, how our oral history, you know, our history that's been orally passed down to us, how serious that needs to also be taken. You know, before this, there was a lot of turmoil with Indigenous communities and museums and institutions because, yes, we were fighting to say that is that item came from someone's grave and we're fighting to get it back. Now, I'm very hopeful with the new NAGPRA regulations that a lot of those conversations will turn more in a positive light, and there'll be a better understanding of, you know, what is spiritual, what is sacred to us, and the reasons why it needs to come home. I feel like with the new regulations, there won't be so much question on the other side of why do you need that? Why does it need to be returned? You know, it's that awful feeling of ownership with many of these institutions. And, you know, I always acknowledge, yes, you have been taking care of it for X amount of years. But that is also a care duty. It's not a feeling of ownership. And it's okay to release that item and that ancestor back to where they were taken from. I think it's also important to acknowledge these past histories of how relatives and all of their things even got to the museum. And that's a really hard conversation that I've had many times with museums and institutions in the manner of how our relatives even came there. And that past of, you know, we're not in this conversation to blame, you know, the living staff people today, but it's important for everyone at the table to know the history and to acknowledge it.
Have there been apologies from some institutions? I should back up and say, I know that some of them have gone out of their way, they say, to work with the Native American and Indigenous communities to say, here is where this came from. It probably shouldn't be here, but we have it because of this, and we're sorry, and we're going to fix it. Is the ownership feeling causing, has it been causing a lot of tension?
So The experience doing a NAGPRA consultation is very different every time. And it is very, it's a true reflection of how many resources and financial resources that museum and institution is putting forth to NAGPRA. We've had many apologies in the past, and I'm grateful for those acknowledgments of the history. And it's also a really nice acknowledgement for a Native person that this is an emotional process for us. This is not easy. And then we've also had institutions that have not apologized, have not acknowledged it, and the relationship and working through bringing a loved one home becomes very hard and very challenging.
I'm curious, can you give some of our listeners who don't know what we're talking about some examples of some of the items we're speaking about? I mean, it's much more than simply grave markers, right?
Oh yeah. So this is like personal, your personal possession. So if you think of today, the things that we use in our everyday lives, and I know today is very different. A lot of things that we use in our lives, we don't create ourselves. We don't make ourselves. But if you think of a time when you did create, when you did make your dishes, when you did make your bag you carry every day, you made the pottery, the glass you drink out of. If you think of all the things that we use in our daily lives today, and thinking back to the relatives that put the time and the energy and their spirit into the items that they used every day, and then those are taken and put on a museum shelf. That basket that was that you created and you made was removed from your home, and you were separated from it. So in our traditional life here, everything that is a possession, a personal possession with you, you take on to the next life and the next cycle of our world. So to have your personal possessions separated from your body, from your spirit, is very unsettling. And I feel like a lot of many people today can also acknowledge, because as human beings, we do have many possessions. We do have items that are close to us. And if you can understand how those items become part of you, they become part of your spirit. So to visit an institution and see a basket who a relative of yours made sitting on a museum shelf, completely separated from any of our other relatives, it's hurtful. And there is great reason for that basket to come home. And then what no one's talking about is how healing it is to know that your relatives are safe, of how healing it is to know that your relative's basket, that their personal jewelry, their pottery, that it is safe now and resting in your care, in tribal care. The unknowing of what's going to happen to those items because they're not in our care is very frightening.
I wonder if we're talking about a situation where for many or most of these items, there needs to be some sort of cleansing ceremony, right? Or something like that to restore them to the place in the universe where they should be.
Right. And each tribe, I only want to speak for Pechanga, but each tribe we do have, we're very lucky we do have those ceremonies. And we're able to bring relatives and their belongings home safely. And I think many tribes across the U.S., we're all able to do that. I think the understanding and the level of understanding of that is sometimes hard for the public because they are not a part of those societies. They're not seeing those ceremonies taking place, but that doesn't mean that they're not happening.
When you say bring them home, and this it sounds like a stupid question, but I think it's not. This doesn't mean that families are going to get to keep these artifacts in their homes, right? But they will be in a place where they are surrounded by the energy of other items from the same tribe. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so when and every item is different, and every tribe also handles the return of their things differently. But for us, it means bringing that item or that relative home to literally rest in the ground. And we take, you know, putting them back to where they were taken from, I think is important to acknowledge. And for other items, you know, putting them back into tribal care. So if that means putting them back into a tribe's, controlled space where the community can enjoy them, and also putting them back into use. And I know for some tribes, putting them back into use for ceremony, those are the elements of care that are very important for tribes to be able to continue.
That's Myra Maciel Zamora, an archaeologist and curator with the Pechanga Band of Indians. Coming up, a tribute to a Broadway pioneer. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keys. Grab some champagne, even if you're just sitting at home watching the Grammy Awards on Sunday.
R&B star SZA is going into Sunday's Grammy Awards show with the most nominations. The Kill Bill singer has 9, including album, record, and song of the year.
She'll definitely take home a couple, okay? It would be very, very, very surprising if she were shut out completely.
Artists Phoebe Bridgers and Victoria Monet are right behind with 7 nods each. Monet is up for Best New Artist. She'll face off against Ice Spice, Jelly Roll, Coco Jones, and more.
Victoria Monet was the surprise multi-nominee of the year. 7 nominations. That's a lot for a relatively, I don't want to say unknown artist, but a lesser known artist. So I'm kind of pulling for her myself.
Taylor Swift once again made Grammy history with her nod for Song of the Year. Thanks to Anti-Hero, she is the artist with the most Song of the Year nominations. She's actually never won in that category, but could break a record for wins in another.
Taylor is obviously the one to beat, but it's kind of interesting because this is not, I don't think anyone would say it's their favorite Taylor Swift album of the year. If she wins, it'll be her 4th, which will be a record.
Trevor Noah will host the Grammys for the 4th consecutive year, but this time he's also a nominee. He's up for Best Comedy Album for I Wish You Would.
I get to enjoy the fact that I'm nominated, but the night's got to go on, the show's got to go on, and so I'll have my mind elsewhere at the time.
In addition to awards, there will be star-studded performances. U2 will make history with the first ever broadcast performance from the Sphere in Las Vegas. Billy Joel, Billie Eilish, Olivia Rodrigo, Burna Boy, and Travis Scott are just a few of the artists set to take the Grammy stage. Don Ubakis, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Speaking of music.
Please open the door. Nothing is different. We've been here before.
Turn the Lights Back On is Billy Joel's first new single in 17 years. Rolling Stone calls it a tender love ballad that doubles as a message to fans who've been waiting for something fresh since he dropped this song on Valentine's Day 2007.
All my life.
The 74-year-old wraps up a decade-long residency at New York's Madison Square Garden in July. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
The Super Bowl is coming up, but so is a 20-year-old celebration of some favorite canines. WCAV-TV's Brianna Kiefner.
The puppies get to showcase all of the amazing things they have to offer, and the country gets to see how incredible rescue dogs can be.
Each of these puppies will play games and get to show all the incredible things they can offer to a home while spreading awareness about rescuing a pet.
For us, in this small community, it brings our village together. We get to have a blast celebrating these dogs, having a good time.
Ahead of the Puppy Bowl, some of those star athletes have already been adopted, like Levi and Bogey.
I just thought he was the most amazing animal ever. He was ginormous at Puppy Bowl. It was just a lot of fun, and I just couldn't live without him.
Green Dogs Unleashed has sent special needs puppies to the bowl for many years. And each year, they say it gets bigger and better for these puppies that are looking for a home.
This gives the community and the general public the opportunity to see just how incredible deaf and sometimes deaf and vision impaired puppies can be. They can do absolutely anything any of the other pups can do.
Dog's not your thing? Try a cafe where an oink oink here and an oink oink there is incredibly welcome.
This cafe in Tokyo is anything but boring. Right. With people going hog wild with micro pigs.
Oh, they're just so cute. So tiny and so small, and kind of want to take one home now.
Swooning over the swine costs customers 50 cents a minute. And pig chures with the tiny trotters are included.
But we just thought the pig cafe was a little bit different. Something that the kids wouldn't always get to hold and pet.
My Pig Cafe's Instagram page connects the pig piles to their thousands of loyal followers. Micro pigs stay tiny, not growing any bigger than a corgi. But cafe bosses say they have big personalities. Each pig is unique, she says. You may notice one may be strong-headed and another may be gentle. Contrary to popular belief, the pigs are quite clean. But critics have raised ethical questions.
Governments have a responsibility to kind of make sure that these things are certified and that the animals are being sourced ethically and that there isn't any kind of illegal trade involved.
But cafe owners insist their pint-sized porkers are loving the attention and living high on the hog. Ian Lee, CBS News.
Finally, the dancing feet and inimitable voice of Broadway legend Chita Rivera are silenced now. The two-time Tony winner and born star died this week at the age of 91. CBS's Vlad Duthier has this remembrance.
Why don't we paint the tag? And all that jazz.
As Broadway's original triple threat.
Many hellos in America.
Chita Rivera stunned audiences with her dancing.
How would you like to put it down over there?
Acting and singing for more than half a century. Rivera catapulted to fame as Anita in the original 1957 run of West Side Story. She continued to shape iconic Broadway characters, starring in the original productions of Chicago, Bye Bye Birdie, and The Rink, which earned Rivera her first Tony Award in 1984. Born of Puerto Rican descent in Washington, D.C. in 1933, Rivera was trained as a dancer. When she jumped from bar to Broadway, she dazzled theatergoers with her mesmerizing moves. Even a 1986 car accident that threatened to keep Rivera off the stage did not stop the star. She went on to win her second Tony Award for the title role in Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Play with me. Play with me.
Rivera made history as the first Latina to win a Kennedy Center honor in 2002. And in 2009, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In an interview with CBS Sunday Morning last year, Rivera reflected on her success.
I do believe that being a dancer gave me the ability to fight and to withstand and to cope. If I come back, I want to come back a dancer.
That's it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. As always, you can find the program online on Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast. Sarah Fishman is the technical supervisor, and Alan Peng provides production assistance. Tara Lipinski is the executive producer. Have a great week. I'm Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert.
And I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert. And I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
And how long have you been the producer of this?
We've been doing this for 2 years now.
Okay. And what is it like to attempt to get feedback from me about the podcast? Be honest about how quickly I respond to emails.
You actually respond to emails surprisingly fast.
Really? I think you might be the only person I respond to. Respond too quickly. Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I expected you to lay into me.
Well, this was over the strike period.
Oh, I had time.
Yeah.
See, that doesn't count. Sure, I responded to everything because responding to you putting reruns up on the podcast was like a form of employment.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had something to get up for every day. So thank you for that. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.